They're back. That's right. Two of my favorite coaching clients, Alan Lazaros and Kevin Palmieri of the Next Level University. And they join me for another coaching call, which seems to be very, very popular. And the main takeaways today are the three types of listeners and what it means to listen. Let me know if you enjoy these episodes with Alan and Kevin and want to hear more of my coaching sessions. Don't forget to join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time for my free trainings. Text me to join my community at 949-298-2905. And you can always email me at david@dmeltzer.com.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
The Next Level University with the two new professors, the Dean of Intellect and the Dean of Emotional Aspect. I don't know which one is which. Kevin Palmieri and Alan Lazaros, my boys. How are you doing?
Living the dream, Dave. We are living the dream.
Good to see you, Dave. I think that was the best intro we've ever had. Appreciate you.
Good. I'm fired up. I'm just so grateful to have you guys in my life. Let's make this happen. I know we'll go over time, so I'm giving you warning. Don't worry. We'll go a little over time. My overview calls for my coaching. Those guys can wait for us. Trust me.
I appreciate it. All right, let's get this thing rolling. So Alan and I are trying to become the most effective communicators that we can for the podcast, for coaching, for speaking, for all of that. What are some common traits or characteristics from the most effective communicators that you've come across and you, because you're a very good one as well?
You know, it's interesting. It's not what I say. It's how I say it. It's not what I say. It's what they hear. Mm. It's not the content that they'll remember, but the way they feel about the content that I provided. And if you can focus in on those three things, you can clear all the interference that your own expectation, your own projection, your own judgments, your own conditions, your own worry, your own insecurity, your own ego-based consciousness has created between you and what you're communicating with. We are connected to everyone and everything. It's, you know, for me, one of the key components of effectively communicating is looking upon everyone as a sponsor and a power sponsor. How many times have you looked at someone and they're afraid of you and you think that you're afraid of them because of the way that they look? Our perception, you know, I fight myself all the time to say, there are no gatekeepers in my life. There are no attackers in my life. There are no judgments and conditions. There are only these vulnerable people like myself, completely human, having a spiritual journey, that are sponsors of mine. This person, Kevin, this person, Alan, they're looking to see who they know that can help me, or even primarily how they could help me themselves and who else can help me. And that's the way that I look upon everyone. That's the way that I speak, that I feel, that they hear. And if you are authentic to your frequency, not only will you be able to reach more people, but you'll allow the people that don't hear you, that aren't ready, to just allow you to plant a seed and go ahead and allow them to fall away or fire them from your life, so that we're concentrating on those that are resonating with what we are trying to communicate.
Wait, so if you look back at your previous awareness, what was your intention when you were giving speeches early on versus what is it now?
So it was motivation. My early speaking was to motivate, to get you up, get you back up, get you started, get you restarted, so I could get you so far up that I could close you. But that never lasted. There was not. Now I live in an inspired world, in spirit, that my first communication is to that which inspires me, to the greatest source of light, love, and lessons that comes through me, kind of like loading up, you know, a water gun. That's all the water that you spray it all over everybody, and it lasts so much longer. And you, with inspiration, can empower people to empower others. Motivation will not allow them to empower others, right? It's a soul sucker. If anything that fear can create, and motivation is one of the things that fear can create, and fear is the biggest soul sucker that there is, time, money, emotion. There's no doubt when people tell me, yeah, but Dave, fear motivates me. Absolutely, it motivates you. I've seen women that were so afraid that, you know, old lady can lift the back of a car to save a grandchild. That's motivating. But how long do you think that she can hold the car up? And two, What does she feel like afterwards when you've expended that energy, right? Our physical being can't, no one ever talks about, yes, yeah, she saved the grandchild, but oh, by the way, she tore six discs in her back and her knee went out. And all. Why? And it happens all the time in sports. People get too motivated, right? And all of a sudden their own physical being can't handle the amount of torque and energy that we exert. It has to be a smooth, that's why neutral is the highest frequency. Because we're allowing the energy to go through us, not to us or for us, like in motivation. And so inspiration comes through us. We're actually selling and speaking through others as well, not to them or for them. When you're motivating, you're speaking to them and for them. And then the last thing that I didn't touch on that's so important is listening. You know, early on, I wasn't listening. And so how can people feel what I'm going to say if I'm not listening, if I don't know what they like or don't like, if I don't know what they're interested in? And there's three kinds of listeners. And I don't know if you guys remember, I think I went over this years and years ago with you. The first listener is the way I used to be. I was a straight out interrupter, even in a sales call. I just interrupt you. I don't care what you say. I was going to shove features and benefits down your throat and interrupt you no matter what you were thinking. Then I got a little more mature in sales, and they called it consultative sales. And, you know, you're supposed to be more interested than interesting. But I was just a waiter. What I would do is all I would do is think about what I wanted to say and then wait for you to say what you said and not listen at all and then interrupt you with what I was going to say. And, you know, that was my next stage of listening. And then the third stage of listening is listening and processing and being more interested. Asking questions about what are you doing today? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? How can I be of service? Do you know anyone that could help me? Asking all the critical open-ended and closed-ended questions in order to get to the capabilities that I have. Can you see any reason you wouldn't want to move forward?
My goodness.
So one of the questions that I want to ask you, Dave, so Kevin and I were talking earlier about some leadership challenges we're having on our team. And we're trying to communicate expectations, but also be appreciative along the way. And so the sort of mantra I've tried to live by is be truthful, but kind. And what I wanted to ask you is, how do you have those difficult conversations with your team when they're not maybe their trajectory is not in the upward direction? And how do you communicate the needs of the business as the needs of the business evolve, and whilst also developing them along the way? I guess, how do you have those tough conversations without making people feel scarce and fearful, like you just described?
Yeah, I just had this problem today. This challenge, I should say. You have to remember three things. You only control your three things. You control your mindset. You control your heart set, the way you feel. And you control what you think, say, do, and believe in your own unconscious competencies. You control your personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions. Once you know that you control those things, you have to realize and hold people accountable for controlling their own mindset, controlling their own feelings, and controlling what they think, say, and do. When we're utilizing a relationship in the context of a business, a collective consciousness that has certain goals, maybe certain values and a certain culture, but certainly action items and objectives that are concretely bed into profitability. When we have that social contract of employment, we have every right to constructively criticize, not raising our voice. You know, today I was constructively criticizing one of my employees because I had prioritized a certain action. They had failed me last action, and then once again indicated they didn't understand what they were supposed to be doing. And just calmly, I pointed out, I'm not going to accept that. And then I got the feedback, you're hurting my feelings. You publicly humiliated me. You shamed me. No, I didn't. I have no intention of doing that to anyone. And you saying that to me just makes me not want to work with you because you don't know who I am. There's obviously no trust that way. You know, people don't realize that as a boss, you know, hey, you're saying I don't trust you. Then why are your feelings hurt? You should trust me that I'm here to make you better, that you should worry if I ignore you, not if I'm trying to make you better. Right? People don't think about that side of it. And I was sitting there today and I didn't raise my voice. I was very calm about, hey man, this is an internal meeting. You know, there's other employees in here that I'm teaching as well, because we are a group. I used to give a dummy tax award when we pre-COVID, where everyone would share their biggest mistakes so that everyone could learn from it, so we don't duplicate other people's mistakes, right? We give a $1,000 bonus for a dummy tax award. It's the best $1,000 I spend to make people feel comfortable that they're learning. But, you know, I think it's so difficult when you care about your employees and your coworkers and your associates so much, because it's so difficult, just like empowering your children. You know, I care about my kids way too much. It's very difficult for me to give them constructive criticism. And it hurts me when they tell me that I hurt their feelings, mm-hmm. right? Or make them cry because I am doing something for the betterment of what I believe for them to make their own decisions. And, you know, it's going to be something that you struggle with your entire business career, these feelings, mindset, and what we think, say, do, and believe. But I, you know, am getting better. Just spending minutes and moments and standing up for myself. You know, in the earlier days, I'd back down and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Look, I shouldn't even tell you I didn't mean to do that. My brand and my leadership speaks for itself, and so does Kevin's and so does Alan. And look, you got to trust people, but you got to vet them. And if they can't take it, then don't work for me. If you are not up for getting better and listening to constructive criticism, don't work for me. I'll help you find somewhere you can hide out in a cubbyhole and click a button on a computer. Nobody's going to say anything to you as long as you hit the number of inputs that they want you to have. Mm-hmm. But if you want to build and grow and expand, you're not going to expand without constructive criticism. I'm sorry. I've learned that from sports, and so have you two. Mm-hmm.
Fire.
You have a follow-up?
No.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
So Dave, huge thanks to you. You are one of the biggest reasons why this is happening for me, but I'm noticing that my anxiety zone has gotten a lot smaller and my learning zone has gotten like far bigger.
Your anxiety zone's farther away.
Further away.
Hopefully it's big because you want to expand through it the way what used to be your anxiety zone is now your learning zone. What used to be your comfort zone is now the size of your learning zone.
Yes. That, what Dave said. For you, at this point in your career, at this point in your life, in your awareness, what puts you in the anxiety zone? And is that something that you want to like test out and figure out like, oh, okay, that still puts me in anxiety? How do you go about that?
I always want to touch on that, right? I want to know how far I can go. I don't want to live in the anxiety zone, right? But if I know where it's at, you know, it's kind of like walking in water and tapping your foot and you know exactly, you know, where you are until your head goes under. You know, it's good to know that point. Well, you know, if I get stronger and better, I can swim out, whatever. But more importantly, I want to know exactly where that anxiety is because I want to spend minutes and moments there, not hours, weeks, days, months. Because if you spend too much time in your anxiety zone, the opposite effect happens. The compound interest starts working against you. Pretty soon, your learning zone, the side of your comfort zone, that causes, you know, so much anxiety. That's where people have nervous breakdowns. I never could understand. How can someone not get out of bed? Well, because they've stayed so long in the anxiety zone that their comfort zone shrunk down to so little that only place they are comfortable is lying in bed, literally. Where the opposite is true for us three, right? You're telling me, Kev, right? No problem. It's amazing. What used to make me so anxious, I feel like I'm in the learning zone. And I will tell you, there's so many things that I felt made me anxious when I was in law school. That's in my comfort zone now. Like, that's how far I've expanded. So very important for you to make mistakes. Very important for you to feel pain. An indicator you're in the anxiety zone. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, financial pain. Oop. In the anxiety zone, what is that indicating? Turn signal. I got a lesson to learn to what? To put me in a better situation, to extend out my learning zone. Because guess what? Pain is an indicator you have a lesson to learn. When you learn the lesson, your learning zone gets to expand out a little bit over the anxiety zone. And that little delta is the lesson. The more lessons you learn, the wider the learning zone gets and the wider the comfort zone gets and the farther out the anxiety gets. And so people are like, oh my goodness, how does Kevin and Alan handle all of this stuff? If I look at our relationship from the day I met you as actresses in a hotel room, God knows what city it was to meet me, what made you anxious when I met you won't even phase. It sits in your comfort zone. If I told you right now, hey, we're going to go live together. You and I are going to do a podcast together. Come in. Let you guys, you were so nervous. You were so, oh my God, you know, there's so much angst in the air. And now look at you. You're sitting there going, oh, this is money.
So what, true.
It is. It's
it was Boston,
true.
By the way.
Boston. Yeah, Boston. Sorry.
So for you, what is that now? Like, what is that right. place where you go and it's like, oh, this is the anxiety zone. Okay, it's still there. I got to take a step back.
Yeah. First of all, it's the amount of time I spend in the anxiety zone I'm extremely conscious of. So that next level university of anxiety zone is, okay, I got the pain. I'm only going to spend minutes and moments and I'm going to figure out this lesson. So I'm not spending years, weeks, months refiguring out that lesson. I've got good at figuring out what the lessons are. But the anxiety zone is strictly being able to identify those key ego-based, mostly secondary ego-based needs that I have. I have a need to be offended. I put so much into myself through me for others. I have a need to be resentful sometimes, those two needs, I really don't have a need to be superior, inferior, separate anymore. I don't have a need to be not worthy. I don't have a need to be angry, anxious, frustrated as much. Angry and frustrated minutes, moments, maybe, but the need to be offended and the need to be resentful are the two anxiety things that I deal with the most. I'm working on it, but I hear it in my voice. I'm speaking from a good place of intention, but I hear it in my voice. You resent this person. You're offended. I can hear the energy, no matter what the words say. I had a step grandma in Middletown, New York, and I loved her, but it was a great analogy for what people do. Have you ever said, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Well, this step grandma, she had to yell at you for everything. So I wasn't used to it, right? I wasn't used to someone that was like very New York, loud, old Jewish grandma. And she literally was the kind of grandma like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud you got straight A's. You're an amazing grandkid. And I would like start crying, like, why is she yelling at me? I couldn't hear what she actually was saying. That's the way that I feel sometimes as a leader. And I get resentful and offended. That, wait a second, why do they think I'm yelling at them? All I'm doing is giving them love.
How do you create a culture of excellence? And then how do you know when, I guess, so Kevin asked me this earlier. He said, what do you think about me asking Dave this question? He said, should we ask Dave's acorn? What do I mean by the acorn? Okay, so you've probably heard this before. Jeff Bezos says that the reason Amazon is what it is today is because our acorn that grew into a mighty oak is to make it easy to make an online purchasing decision. That's like what Amazon was based on from the very beginning. Help the customer make an online purchasing decision. Okay. What's your acorn in your life?
Empowering people to be happy. Yeah, empowering people to be happy. So I spent years trying to figure out my acorn, like Jeff Bezos, of how I could be the richest man on earth, or at least make over $1 billion. And I think I've told you guys before, I had a very difficult time connecting the dots backwards so that I could energetically believe that I could do it. And when I shifted, whatever meditation I was in on a walk one day in South Mission Beach, and it came to me that my acorn was to empower people to be happy. I had a 12-year-old kill herself, a friend of my daughter's, and I was contemplating like how this could occur, what was going on in the world, that suicide was the fastest growing cause of death in America with several different age groups, not just teenagers, and it was just bothering me. And it came to me. And here's the irony of that dream. When I realized and connected the dots that all I got to do is find 1,000 people like Kevin and Alan in my lifetime that I know without a doubt will empower another 1,000 people each to empower another 1,000 people each to be happy. 1,000 times 1,000 was 1,000,000. 1,000,000 times 1,000 was 1,000,000,000. And the aspect of that acorn, which is so aligned with what I believe in the universe, is that also connected the dots of how I was going to create abundance of over $1 billion. That if I could be the person to impact all of those people, that I would be able to monetize that for the betterment of all, in whatever aspect of whatever happens that I can't even imagine is going to happen, nor do I try to put my finger on it. But I know that this is working for me. I've never made more money, helped more people, and have more fun with my life with one objective of empowering 1,000 people to empower 1,000 people to be happy. And I do that when you talked about building that culture with 4 values and 5 daily practices. And I'm sticking to those. They're evolving, but they are substantially clearer to me than they were 10 years ago. And they are truly impacting people because people are listening, hearing, acting upon, understanding, and most importantly, feeling what I'm talking about.
My goodness.
Do you create, so within your company and companies, you want to create a mentorship structure, right?
Yeah.
And I guess you mentioned the 4 values, 5 daily practices. Does each person on your team know who they're mentoring or who they're supposed to mentor? Because
we mentor each other, but there are specific mentees. And and so whether you're an employee or an intern, there's someone that is mentoring you. Someone that sits in a situation, has a skill, a knowledge, or a similar desire that you can get directions to reach or obtain the higher level of knowledge and hopefully surpass it. And so every one of the full-time employees has at least one intern that they mentor. Every employee at least has one internal mentor, which could be me. And we have Monday morning mentorship meetings, Wednesday checkup meetings, and Friday trainings and Friday mentorship meetings after the public Friday training that we have. So 3 specific times during the week, we have mentoring, all based on reminding everyone of the 4 values and the 5 daily practices. Especially, we use as a centerpiece of all of that our calendar. So I use the calendar, which is why, especially over the last month, why I've decided to tell all my employees that your performance will be in my evaluation of how well you are a student of your calendar. So I gave daily calendar captains. So to make it more efficient, because the calendar is unbelievable. When you have, you know, at least 30 planned things during the day, at least 30 unplanned things during the day, plus social activity interruptions in life, we have a very active schedule. And so I created a daily calendar captain, so that they only have to study, pay attention to, give an intention to the coincidences that are aligned with our values and objectives with the lens of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude. So Colleen, for example, who you guys know, she would have Friday. She's studying this Friday, next Friday, the Friday after, and the Friday after, and tomorrow. The Monday captain studies all 4 Mondays and tomorrow. The Tuesday captain, Wednesday, et cetera. So with 7 employees, I can have a deep, deep, deep analysis and attention and intention carried through a mentorship program to create a collective consciousness that creates productivity, accessibility, and gratitude based upon the 4 values that I teach, incorporating the other daily activities, which are taking inventory of values, asking and attracting, doing it now, and practicing ending fear, all coordinated within the student of the calendar by being more interested than interesting, paying attention, plus giving intention to the coincidences we want. In other words, that's the mathematical equation for luck. All the businesses I run are the luckiest businesses in the world, because that's the reason I know what I'm doing.
Do you mind if I
You can. Yeah, go ahead.
2 quick questions. One of them is how long are those meetings, those check-ins, Monday, Wednesday, Friday? And then the second question is, have you noticed your core values? It wasn't always 4, right? Did you used to have a lot more and then you honed it?
Yeah. So they've been clarified. You know, I've always had 4 pillars, which are now the 4 values: gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration or effective communication. But the daily practices have all, you know, narrowed down. You can hear how deep, for example, being a student of your calendar, there's multiple layers of lessons that were included in there that I've now clarified and allow people to experience. So, but look, like everything else, I don't know what I don't know tomorrow. Remember, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. I am so happy to be here where I'm at. I'm at the right way at the perfect time. I'm only angling to what I believe to be better. I have objectives. I'm enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential at an angle. But I have faith. It's a currency, an object of energy I put into the flow to get what I want, that I'll end up somewhere better. I am where I'm supposed to be. I'm angling to something that I think I want, but I have faith I'll end up somewhere better. Utilizing these 4 values and the 5 daily practices, I can accelerate, exponentially grow, and be much more statistically successful, which will lead me to make more money, help more people, and have more fun, which is my objective, to empower other people, because I believe that's how we're happy.
So I have learned a lot recently about math and the fact that I don't know a ton about it. And I know you are very well versed. Alan has a math brain as well. What can I do to increase my math skills? Like, what resources would you recommend?
Well, first I want to answer the one question I did. I do have a mathematical mind. My Monday morning meetings are an hour. Wednesday check-ins are 15 minutes and Friday meetings are an hour. That's after the Friday training, of course. And then in order to learn math, I would study at first Kabbalah. I would start with the Kabbalah, take a Kabbalah online course to understand the math of the universe, a higher level math and understanding of the balances that exist mathematically with time and forgiveness, relativity, in the core early sense. With, you know, no religious context at all, but learn the technology of the universe by studying Kabbalah. And then certain things will, as your awareness rises in math, will come to, you know, your presence. One will be time. You know, for me, the mastery of time is the mastery of mathematics, that we sit in a man-made construct called time. And that's the first math that I want to learn. Then the second would be physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics, and understanding that. And then the third one would be profit. So for me, profit is a critical component of math because I spend a third of my life in activity I want to get paid for on average. And so I want to know how to monetize things and figure out where profit lies, where the margins of millionaires lie, how I can smile through struggle, find great opportunity within great change as we are today. I know you guys are coming in and out. I got one more minute, so hopefully you can come in. If not, I just want to tell everybody this has been an incredible experience. As always, we have the Next Level University with Kevin Palmieri and Alan Lazaros. They're still on dial-up service, so as soon as Boston gets high speed, we'll be much better off. Oh, they're coming back in and out.
Dave, can you still hear me? I think our camera went out, but our audio...
Yeah, we can hear you. Okay. All right, we got one minute. What's the last words? Yeah.
Okay. One last question. Sorry about that, Dave, about the camera. And okay. My question for you.
Finally, I'm the best looking one on the show. It's taken all these years. I did it. Thank you. I'm the best looking one on the show.
Better with age, Dave. Better with age. Okay. So have you noticed the productivity or progress of your team increase or decrease now that everyone's remote? And also, what have you got a pulse on in the world? Do you believe that the global economy is better off with more remote virtual work or not? What's your take on that whole thing before we go?
Well, time and risk tolerance will tell you whether it's better off or not economically. I know efficient wise, statistical success wise, productivity wise, remote working is far more conducive to success. And so, you know, for me, without a doubt, our company, our team, way more productive, accessible, and gracious, way more statistically successful and efficient in what they do, much more happy because they can coordinate and control their own time beyond the travel time, the expenses, the waste that was occurring, you know, from us meeting in Boston to flip over hotel rooms and pay for all that. To this is a much higher quality show and we get so much more value out of it. And it's much more efficient, effective, and statistically successful. So the universe, meaning in depending on time and risk tolerance, you know, in the long run, in the scope of infinity and limitlessness, there's no doubt that working remotely with the technologies we have is far more efficient, effective, and statistically successful. But determined upon your timing and risk tolerance, there may be some incongruencies with that philosophy. So there's no great truth in that. And we only know what we don't know. And I could change my mind tomorrow because something else could happen. So that's, you know, my philosophy with time and how I apply it to the math and to, of course, profit. Anyway, boys, I got to jump. I got coaching calls. I got more people to empower. Make sure we do this again in 2 weeks. You are my faves. I'm not afraid to say it. This is what I dream for all of my coaching clients: to be prepared to get as much out of me as you can in the short amount of time that they do. Kevin, Alan, be kind to your future self, do good deeds, and please keep up the good work for me. I appreciate you both.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you for listening.
If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you'd like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.